I'd like now to welcome Susan Strong. She's an author. Her latest book is Move Our Message, How to Get America's Ear. She's founder and director of the Metaphor Project, which is on the web at metaphorproject.org. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hello. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to have you here. Now, you talk about and write about messaging, how to get our message out, how to speak about things in a way that people will hear them. And it turns out that with all the innumerable problems and issues we have in this country, the way people respond to them is heavily dependent on how they're framed. First of all, what is a frame?
Well, a frame is, from the cognitive science point of view — I'm not a cognitive scientist, I'll just try to do my best with this — is a structure that exists in the mind that is a kind of set of ideas that all clump together. And I think Anat Shenkar, who used this metaphor, I think she was talking about going to eat in a restaurant. Then you would imagine also, okay, there's food, there's tablecloth, there's table, chairs, you know, there's a whole set of things that goes with it, and that's a frame. So I like to think of metaphors also as evoking stories, and the stories also carry values. So it's a kind of a package things, a set of things that can be called up by, say, a single word.
What are some examples of how you might frame something in different ways that then have opposite effects, two different effects on the way people receive the information?
Well, if you were talking about legislation, then if you use the word regulation, people will feel kind of uneasy. They don't like to have more regulations. Regulations kind of hamper you. They hamper your business. They hurt, you know, the economy and stuff like that. So that's one way of talking about what essentially is the rules for our society. But if you talk about rules, having rules, then you've evoked the sports metaphor, which has to do with play by the rules. And that means everybody's on the same page and is playing by the same rules. And that's part of the larger American story, which is that we are the people who abide by the rule of law, all of us, equally.
And so it's funny because people often use the word, the phrase, rules and regulations, and yet rules have a kind of positive connotation in our American mythology, and regulations a negative one.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you actually, you have this organization called the Metaphor Project, and you put things out into society through nefarious means like
Twitter.
And blogs,
Facebook,
and social media, things like that.
Yeah.
And when there was a financial regulation thing happening in Congress, you basically said, uh-oh, let's not use regulations. And you actually put it out there that it should be rules.
Yes, I blog, and I wrote one which had as its subject line, "Say rules, not regulation." And I tweeted that, and I put it on Facebook, and I put it on Daily Kos and Op-Ed News, and I have also a big email list, national and international, and I sent it out to them. You know, so, I mean, obviously, there's a subject line, and then I explain in the blog.
And it did catch on.
It did catch. The right people started using it, yeah.
So let's talk about the kinds of frames and myths and sort of pieces of the American story, the American set of mythologies, a lot of which are unconscious, although they come from our founding documents and founding fathers and perhaps even a few mothers here and there. What are some elements of our American mythology?
Well, the one that I like to start talking about is something I call the American dream, and it's not the dream of the house with a little white picket fence. It's actually more a dream about who we are as a people, and the phrase that I like to use is the short example of that is we're the can-do people. We can do whatever it is that needs to be done. So that's an example of that. Another example of a story element is something that I call we're on a roll, which is something George Bush said, but it was something he said because his very expert communications advisor told him to say it.
We're on a roll?
We're on a roll, yeah. And it
what
was,
is that it, from? Is that from,
he said it during the Iraq War.
Right, but is it a metaphor of something rolling?
Well, I'll get to that. The reason his experts, his communication experts, told him to say that was that the idea of being on a journey or a trip or moving, being in motion, rolling somewhere, is the most common American cultural metaphor, the most common American political metaphor is one of the sports metaphors.
And so probably why we have so many road movies.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's interesting because you have talked a lot about how it's important if we are trying to advance a social issue, and there are examples of Martin Luther King and Cesar Chavez and so many other people doing this and really evoking the American metaphors, and if you don't do that, you're going to have a harder time. In a way, it makes it difficult for us to learn from other countries that do things differently.
Oh, well, you know, that's the thing about Americans. They actually are not very interested in what people in other countries are doing. So it doesn't actually work very well to approach them by saying, you know, well, in Denmark they're doing this, you know, because I think primarily the reason for that is that we are an immigrant nation. It doesn't matter to us what the people are doing where we used to be. You know, it doesn't matter where the used to be is. It's this sense that we are a new nation. We still think of ourselves that way. And we are, by the reasoning of most of the people in the world. We're a pretty new nation. And, you know, our idea is that we do the thing that nobody's done before. So why should we care about what other countries are doing? Now, I'm not for this at all. I'm not advocating it. But I'm just saying that's the reason why it exists.
But it did make it hard. I mean, for example, T.R. Reid wrote a wonderful book and did a frontline documentary about the way healthcare is done in a bunch of different countries. And to actually look at that and see how we might draw from lessons learned, we're incapable of it.
Yeah, I think that's unfortunately one of the bad parts of the American character. And so what that requires is for people to take whatever they've done well in some other country and reframe it here as something that will help us, you know, do something good for our country and leave out where it was originally.
And pretend that we made it up.
Yeah, well, there's that, yeah. Alas.
Now, what are some other examples? I mean, we have the journey, we have the rule of law, the can-do attitude. What are some other American metaphors?
Well, I like to talk about the small town metaphor and the idea of small town security, which is a really important piece of the American story. And in that, there's a dream of living in a small town where everybody knows you and you're safe and everybody will come and help you if you need help and everybody is honest with each other and cooperates and so on. And that's kind of like a piece of that dream floating out there, the ideal dream. So the phrases that evoke that the most are community. You talk about community. Now, that's the best way to do that in this country, is to evoke it by talking about, you know, we need to build community here, so and so.
It seems when you talk about it that that's a really, if I may say so, white dream, because the very towns that had safety and security for white people were lynching and doing Jim Crow for the people who lived on the other side of the town.
In the South, yes.
Yeah.
I think that the dream of the small town is it's not limited to the South. And in most places in the country, it doesn't have that kind of you know, nightmare quality. Now, unfortunately, in the South, it does.
So how do you teach people who are working on social issues to use what you know about Americans, about framing, about moving forward, to bring to their issues? Because often those issues are really about, if I may say so, the dark side of our character. Mm-hmm. We've been here talking about domestic violence at a conference on domestic violence. And in a way, I mean, it's not just a kind of thing that somehow happens. It really is kind of the flip side, dark side of this American nature.
Oh, well, we are a violent society.
Yeah.
And we have violent entertainment. I'm not saying that the entertainment causes the violence. I'm just saying that we are saturated with violence. And we also have, in terms of our government's idea of what foreign policy is, it's military policy. And there are people in Washington now, and we are not just talking about liberals and do-gooders who are saying, you know, we have to really rethink this because we're making a lot of enemies out there. You know, this is not the way to actually run a railroad. So I think that it's very important to recognize where we are and where a lot of people in the country are, that violence is just kind of in the grain of the country. You know, that's kind of like how you do things. But interestingly enough, in a way, there's more and more evidence that the American people right now don't think war works. So war doesn't work. Okay, what about other ways of dealing things with things that are violent? Do they work? You know, well, maybe not, you know. So, of course, in the case of domestic violence, it's a totally different situation. It's not usually evaluated in terms of whether it works or not. But it's an interesting idea that I'm just having right now, which is I wonder what would happen if you did try working with that. Like, you know, does domestic violence work for the perpetrators in the end? Or, you know, is there a way we can make it not work for them, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, it's an interesting challenge because our society also, I mean, embedded in our sports metaphors and rule of law metaphors and business metaphors is kind of either a cowboy or mm-hmm. a guy of some kind. And mm-hmm. really, it's a kind of sexist metaphor. And so mm-hmm. what we're talking yeah. about is bringing a non-sexist or true equality forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does yeah. that challenge our underlying American story?
Well, I think that there are aspects of the American story, the ideal American story, that are very much already egalitarian, and that would be the small town, where everybody sort of cooperates and people take care of each other. That's kind of like the nurturing piece. And people, they don't like to, you know, there's been some talk about the fact that we should talk about nurturing or talk about empathy, but unfortunately, it's better to talk about building community. That works better. But building that sense of safety and security in the small compass and expanding that to the larger community and the world is, I think, a very powerful tool. And I just wrote a piece, which is actually posted on the various places I post, and also it's on my website on the homepage. It's called National Security, Going Up or Going Down. And one of the things I'm doing in it is citing some work that was done by the Friends Committee on National Legislation and the American Friends Service Committee and putting out a booklet called Shared Security. And in it, they have a nice little passage that I quoted about how nations should behave. And it's basically it's the old kindergarten rules, you know, don't hit people and you know, share and so on. But my point was that we are now in a new world situation where you might say the web has made us into a global village. McLuhan spoke correctly. You know, we are now a global village. So, you know, we really can't afford to go around hitting people and not sharing, especially given some of the things that are coming down the pike, the climate chaos problem.
For example, what are some of the ways in which it might help the fight against climate change? What are some new ways of thinking about it or new metaphors that might be used to help us move forward instead of the kind of crazy gridlock that we're in with the kind of Fox News denial machine and all of that?
Yes. Well, there's been a lot of research on different types of audiences, and I did write a piece about that, and it's also on my site. It's on the homepage down where the links for recent articles are. And it's called Framing Climate Change Action Now. And the first kind of audience that's out there is people who are convinced that climate change is coming, or it's here, and it's going to be really bad, but they don't know very much about our being able to do anything to mitigate it.
So there's this idea, it's inevitable, oh gosh.
Yeah, and I don't want to think about it, so, you know, I'm just going to go kind of ignore it because I can't do anything about it, it's coming anyway. So for those people, you need to give them messages about what people are actually doing. And there's a lot of work being done at the local and state level. You know, it's really stuck at the national level, but it's not stuck at the state and local level. So giving people ideas about what's happening in those areas is really important, and suggesting things they could do. And there are also national campaigns that you can hook people up with. And one of the things, of course, is the 350.org campaign to get people to put pressure on institutional investors to divest from fossil fuel stocks. And, of course, the reason for that is we have to break the power of the fossil fuel lobbies because they're stopping us from doing anything to prevent damage. And then there's the audience that maybe hasn't heard too much about it or has heard Fox News. And these people, I kind of divide them up between the rabid Fox News followers, you know, and the sort of professional or even just volunteer deniers, just skip them. Don't even try to argue.
Don't
go there.
Yeah.
But the people who are sort of, well, what's that? Or, you know, I don't know. I don't see it. That with them, you need to be very, especially careful not to sound too scary, because then they'll shut down too. And you need to talk about, well, you know, they're having all these droughts, and then there's all this strange weather and, you know, storms and what happened in New York with the hurricane. And we need to really take some action to prevent worse damage. There's, again, evidence that talking about prevention is much more powerful than any, you know, other way of framing it.
One thing that I think many of us have observed, certainly you have observed over the years, is that Republicans have put a tremendous amount of effort and successful effort into framing, into metaphors, into messaging, into language over the last three decades. Democrats have done not so good a job of it. What's going on?
Well, I think that the best explanation is that the Democrats have a base which is educated, or if not educated, is more interested in, you might say, talking about their issues in a more, what shall we say, sometimes people talk about nuanced way, but I don't think that's necessarily all of it. It's just like they're more into the issues and the facts and the statistics and the reasons and stuff like that. And the base that the Democrats cater to are people who are more likely to think they are persuaded by that. Now, cognitive science tells us that actually people have made their decisions about what they believe long before they get to the statistics and the facts and the arguments. But that's made basically a kind of in an emotional way around values. So the Democrats, I think, just simply couldn't bring themselves to do what the Republicans did. And that is, the Republicans paid attention to communication, early communication science and studies that came out of the Second World War. And then, you know, Madison Avenue was very interested in finding out, you know, what persuades people. And so they really the Republicans paid attention to that research and so on. So they were very willing to do whatever it took to persuade people. And of course, they don't mind if they shave the truth or fudge or whatever.
Or oversimplify.
It's not, very often it's not oversimplify. It's kind of like slanting or twisting. I think I wouldn't want to get oversimplify into this, because what I advocate is that we need to simplify, but we need to do it in a truthful way. We need to come up with our own sound bites, and they need to be truth bites, but they need to be sound bites, because as we heard frequently today, we have 9 seconds to get our message through, and it better be good. It better be something, a word, a phrase, a metaphor that will evoke a story and values fast and be lively and, you know, something that people will want to put onto Twitter.
And sometimes the differences are so simple, as before you were talking about rule versus regulation. Another mm-hmm. one was gun control, which Americans hate, and gun safety, which we have to thank you for. Who knew? Susan Strong. How did you come up with that?
Well, I have a process. As I say, I've been doing this for about 17 years now, and when I start to get mad about an issue, I start getting out a big pad of paper and just scribbling down words and phrases, and I knew what I wanted in the sense of getting something that would be able to communicate what we mean by gun control, but get away from the control word, because a lot of Americans don't like control. And unfortunately, on the left, people are used to using their in-group jargon, and they aren't thinking about how that feels to others. And the thing about gun safety, when I finally came up with that, was that gun owners also want gun safety. And it's just the NRA is just a creature of the gun manufacturers. And they have big pockets, and they're willing to spend to defeat any legislators that try to do something reasonable. But I think that the sense of rebellion against that is growing even among gun owners.
Very interesting. Now, we have a country which is full of hope and optimism and community and freedom to succeed through hard work and small town security and safety and cleanliness and all of these things that make us seem kind of Pollyanna if you think about it, but they're very much a part of our American story. We're also a young country. Do you see any signs of maturing? And as a country matures, do its metaphors change?
Oh, my. Well, you know, I'm 74. So I have some experience, but looking at the history of our country, I don't think I could say that we've matured. I think we go through cycles of being wiser and less wise. And I think that would be really the most I'd be willing to put out there.
Do you think that the gay movement, I mean, starting in the 80s with the whole response to the AIDS epidemic and now gay marriage or marriage equality, do you think that has changed us in any fundamental way?
Well, I think there was a change that was coming up from the grassroots that led to that change. And also, I've heard people who were advocates saying that it worked because people suddenly realized they knew people who were gay. So I think it's a long process. I mean, I think that the AIDS epidemic probably led to gays more realizing that they needed to come out in order to get more public support. And that led to more people knowing people who were gay. Oh, you're gay. Oh, well, you're not so strange, you know. And that process percolated through the population. And ultimately, we got to a point where, well, what is this about? You know, why should we be doing this to these people? It's not American. It's unfair.
What issues are you working on most strongly now, and where would you like to see change in terms of the way we talk about things?
On my website, it says that I work on all range of issues, environmental, peace, social justice, social and economic justice, and now I'm sort of branching out into other areas that might be considered women's issues, you know, things of that sort. So I don't really have a focus. That's really essentially what the Metaphor Project does, is avoid focusing on one thing. You know, I mean, 1 month I'll write about one thing, like I wrote about the Climate Protection Act in January, and this last month in March I published something on, basically, it was on national security, and of course, partly brought into the present by the NSA stuff. But personally, I'm very interested in the climate change issue because I think, you know, if we don't fix that, nothing else is going to matter. But I work on a wide range of issues, and people consult me on a wide range of issues.
Susan Strong is founder and executive director of the Metaphor Project. Her latest book is Move Our Message, How to Get America's Ear. You can find more online at metaphorproject.org. Thank you for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.